Hello, this is Dan Bender, executive producer of the Singles Podcasting Network. Today, I'm excited to present Single Living, a podcast that brings you straight talk on everything that concerns today's singles, including relationships, dating, travel, and financial security. Single Living is hosted by Rich Goss, a well-respected expert in the singles industry. He is the author of 8 books on dating and has lectured on the subject in over 50 colleges and universities. Rich is frequently interviewed by the news media, including Oprah, CNN, Fox News, and the Wall Street Journal, to name just a few. And now, here's the host of Single Living, Rich Goss.
My guest today is internationally acclaimed author and numerologist Beryl Nozidar. A New Zealander, Beryl has been doing tarot and numerology readings for more than 25 years. She has traveled all over the world, from England to Africa to the United States and Europe, spreading her spiritual wisdom. She is the author of Find Your Heart Number. Welcome, Beryl.
Welcome. Thank you.
How are you finding this visit in the United States?
Well, I always love coming here, but I love returning back to my beautiful New Zealand even more.
Well, now, you have a beautiful retreat house in New Zealand, don't you?
Yes, so we have 10 acres of land, which is on the north part of New Zealand, because the North Island and the South Island are very different.
Yes.
North Island is subtropical. So we're on the coastline. We have about 4 acres of grassland. We've got an acre of orchard, and then we have 5 acres of bush, which just goes right down to the ocean front. So it's absolutely magnificent.
And do you have that on your website, the pictures of
yes,
the place?
Yes, we do. We're inviting people to come in and join us, because it's often very difficult for people in the States to go somewhere where they have rainwater, where they have organic food,
yes,
where the air is less polluted. And you can also walk and enjoy the countryside and get some spiritual sustenance.
Right, and the website is www.berylnozidar.com, and I'm going to spell it because your name is an unusual one. Beryl is B-E-R-Y-L, and Nozidar is N-O-Z-E-D-A-R. So we'll plug that website at the end of the interview as well. But let's get into numerology. What is numerology, Beryl?
Numerology is to do with the energy that comes from numbers. It was first discovered by the Greek mathematician Pythagoras thousands of years ago. And he decided that there were certain, like a 1 has got a different energy to, say, a 9. The numerology that I do is based on your date of birth and also the spelling of your name.
Right. And you wrote a book on this topic called Find Your Heart Number.
Yeah, this was quite interesting, because basically what happened, I've done lots and lots of readings for people, and there were times when maybe couples weren't getting on. And so I would do the numerology of everyone. And people would come to say to me, who am I compatible with? So I thought it would be a good idea, rather than repeating the same thing over and over again,
yes,
to write a book so people could have a look, you know, and decide whether they could whether the partner was compatible or not.
How did you get into counseling people with numerology and tarot?
Well, just as a matter of interest, years ago I did a basic course on numerology and started doing this on my children and my family, and realized how helpful it was. I had a son who would never do what I asked him to do, and his number was a 1.
Yes.
And so, of course, 1s make better cheese than Indians. So I could understand my children, understand my parents, my friends, and so it helped me in a lot of ways. And then I used it with the numerology as well. The tarot was an interesting thing, because I was working as a stenographer at the Justice Department. And when people came in, I just had a feeling, you know, whether they were guilty or whether they were innocent. And I developed this psychic ability also with doing yoga. So I went to see a lady who told me that I would be an international psychic and travel the world, which, you know, I thought mm-hmm. she was talking out of her, you know,
yes,
back of the head.
Right.
But I bought a pack of tarot cards and started doing readings, and it just went from there. It just absolutely mushroomed.
Wonderful. And get into the compatibility a little bit, because what I like about some of the things that you do is you make it very clear from the story you tell about your family and your son and so forth, that a lot of people out there get angry because the other person, you know, doesn't fit whatever expectations they have, and they think there's something wrong with that person or something bad about that person. And the fact of the matter is that we're not necessarily compatible with every person in the world, and there is going to be friction because of the different personality makeups that we have, and certainly that applies to our children, because you know, we're not able to choose all the different characteristics they have when they're born. A lot of that is predetermined, and unless you give permission to people to be themselves, and if you try to force them into a particular mold, it's going to destroy that relationship, wouldn't you say?
Precisely. There's a lovely saying the New Zealand Maori say, that when we're born, we're like a rough piece of jade, and all that life should do is polish the piece of jade. And
yes,
so often people try to change the piece of jade, because you can enhance that, but you can't really change it.
Well, you use the phrase, Beryl, I believe a leopard doesn't change its spots. So what do you mean by that in terms of numerology?
If you're, say for one thing, say you're a Taurus, you can't become an Aries.
Yes.
So if you're one, you can't become a two. So there is a basic personality that we have.
And could you go into those nine personality types according to numerology?
Basically what happens, I'll just explain a little bit first of all. Numerology is like a cake. It's got chocolate, it's got flour, it's got eggs, and it's got milk. And sometimes I hear people saying, I'm a number one. Well, you can't be just a number one. It's a combination of numbers. So you have a dominant personality or a dominant number, and this is the day that you were born. So if you were born on the 19th or the 10th or the 1, you add these numbers together. So the dominant personality is of a 1. They are a leader, and they're very independent. So they are never going to be a follower. These are the people that are destined, or it's natural for them to be a leader.
And is there a famous one in history, Beryl, that you could cite to us?
Oh, gosh.
put you on the spot there.
And, you know, you won't believe this. I've actually written these in my book. because I've done, like, the spiritual energy of the one, but basically a president would be a one.
Okay.
Because they're more likely to be, you know, out there and asking people to follow them.
And what's the difficulty of trying to relate to someone who is a one? What do you have to look out for if you're in a relationship with a one?
Well, if you're with a one, you can't tell them what to do because it's just one. So you would plant a seed there. You would say, do you think it would be a good idea to go to the movies? And they will then think it's their idea because...
Right.
They like it to be one to thinkers. They're innovative. They're pioneers. So, you know, they really like to do things their way. They like to come to their own decisions.
Yes. And what would you say a two is? How would they be different from a one?
Now, a one and a two can get on very well because a two is receptive. They are the followers. They are the nurturers. So they are happy to follow. The problem with the two is they can find it hard to make decisions. They can think of a good reason to do one thing and a good reason to do another. So if the one says, well, let's go this way, they're happy to go. So basically, two is a softer personality.
So what you're saying is that the twos are the ones that are easy to get along with, and the ones, you know, they may be exciting and may become president of the United States or president of New Zealand, but they're never going to be really easy to relate with.
No. A two would be a person that would be very happy to support, said the president, because they are people that don't want to be in the limelight.
Yes.
But quite happy to be aware, you know, in the home or something like this.
And tell us about the threes, Beryl.
Oh, the threes are lovely. Threes are real fun bunnies. They love a challenge, and they're a real free spirit. And so when you meet a three, they're very likable people. The disadvantage is that they often are like a butterfly. They can fly from one flower to another without a definite direction. They're involved in discovery. They just love new things. So a three is a very interesting person to be around. They often go from job to job to job, but they have a wide variety of knowledge because of this.
So a woman who was looking for a husband who was going to be a good provider and be able to make the mortgage payment, looking for financial stability, might want to steer away from a three.
I mean, if she wants a fun time, fine. But
yes.
But if a 3 would also have a 4 in the numerology and the date of birth, this would be perfect because
yes.
they would love the challenge, but they would also, and, you know, obviously we'll talk about 4, because 4 is a more logical, practical. So it wouldn't be just a typical 3. You would look, if a person had a 3-day born, 3 months, and 3-year, yes, you'd steer away.
Yes. And getting into those 4s, which you just started to do, tell us about them.
4s are the logical, practical, dependable people. A 4, if they say they're going to ring you at 10 o'clock,
yes.
they could ring you at 10 to 10 to say, I can't make it. So 4s
uh-huh.
are dependable.
Yes.
The downside of 4 is that they often don't like to move. They can be a little stubborn. You know where they are. And as a matter of interest, if you have a 3 who is the butterfly and the 4 is more like the log, this can be compatible because the log is there for the butterfly to come back on.
Yes.
So this can the 4 can actually neutralize the energy of the 3.
And what about number 5? Tell us about those personality characteristics.
5s are very talkative. They're people, the teachers, the writers, the communicators, the actors. And these are people that are very quick thinking, quick acting, quick moving, sometimes a little impatient. But they're the people who can talk small talk, can talk to anybody about anything.
So they're good flirts, that they'd be good at a party.
Oh, yes.
And the negative thing about them might be that they have a tendency to be motor mouths. You can get a little tedious after a while.
You're right, because they will talk about anything.
Yes.
A 4 could find a 5 a little frustrating because 4s are a few words, where 5s never stop talking.
And number 6, tell us about them.
6 is, it's a beautiful number. It's loving. It's nurturing. 6s are the people that tend to work in healing. They're affectionate. They're the people who, if it was a lady, she would love romance, love flowers. If she didn't get this, she could feel a little rejected. So it's good to understand a 6. If you only have to give them a little flower or something like that, and they'll be happy. But 6s do need to be touched, to be hugged, to be loved.
Yes, and what do you avoid in a 6, or what do you have to be prepared for that might rub you the wrong way?
Revenge.
A
6 is a person, if you get on the wrong side of them, you know, watch out for the nails, because they can also be very vindictive.
Really? And they're kind of like an elephant that they never forget?
Oh, yes.
And what about number 7?
7 is a very sensitive number. It's feeling. Often 7s are intuitive. They also like travel. So a 7 is a person that, like a 4. A 4 really doesn't like travel, but a 7 does. So if you were to get a 4 and a 7, you could come across a little bit of a problem there. There would have to be some compromise. Because 7 is the number, in the tarot, it's the chariot, and the chariot is movement. So they like to move. The downside is that they can lack confidence, fear failure, and not do things because if they feel they're not going to succeed, they will just avoid doing it totally.
Okay, so that's number 7, and tell us about number 8.
8s are possibly one of the hardest working people you can get. It was interesting when I worked in the Justice Department. A lot of people had 8s because 8s like justice. The downside of this is that they can be workaholics.
Mm-hmm.
They can provide the partner with the material things of life, but not the emotional. So, and if they are working, they'll expect somebody else to be working as hard as they do.
And what about number 9, the final number in numerology?
9 is the strongest of all the numbers in numerology. In math, if you multiply 9 by 2, it's 18, and 1 and 8 is 9. So it's called the indestructible number. So it's a number that's tenacious, the perfectionist. When you get to 9, if they've done something 99% right, they will tend to think that they may have done it wrong. But, you know, they like to get 100%. So 9s are the most tenacious of all people.
And they're perfectionists, I take it.
The perfectionists.
Yes.
They also are very they're very diligent. They can overwork. This is the eights and nines of people that can overwork. But they provide the bacon so that, you know, they bring the material needs.
Yes. Well, so there's where the contradiction comes in. The nines are the ones who work so hard and earn a lot of money. But on the other hand, if you're in a relationship with them, they never have any time to spend it on you or with you.
That's so. But, you know, what I believe, you know, this is the numbers are the basic energy of a person.
Yes.
You can always, you know, when you have someone who's a nine, you can say, how about having a bit of a break and let's go and walk in the park? So you can always modify, because I believe that relationships come together to interact and modify and then become, you know, compatibility is communication. And so if you have a nine, you would gently say to them, honey, wouldn't it be a good idea for us to go for a walk?
And which number are you, Beryl, by the way, of the nine personality types?
You might as well know. I'm the motor mouth. I'm the five.
Well, then I'm glad I called you to interview you, because not everybody can carry on a 28-minute conversation over the phone and over the radio broadcasting waves. And, of course, we're on the podcasting network right now.
Well, we could possibly go for 4 days. You know, I mean, you have to find a way to shut me up.
Yeah, I think my producer would definitely edit this interview if we went too long. But let's go on. What do you do? Here's the $64,000 question, Beryl. What do you do if you're in a relationship with somebody and they're a wonderful person and you're very attracted to them and you have a lot of fun with them and physically they're very exciting as well. You've got a fantastic romance and sex life with them. But what do you do if you're basically incompatible with them? Is there light at the end of the tunnel, or do you just have to dump them and choose somebody who's more appropriate?
Well, by what you said, that doesn't actually sound very incompatible, because if you've got a great sex life and whatever all the others. But I think
yes.
That what happens, often we are physically attracted to someone. But, you know, there's a vibe there, there's an energy. But when it comes to communication, this is often where the problem lies. And I think that understanding this person's numbers gives you some idea that, for example, if you have a four and they come home from work, they don't want to talk. They want to sit there and they want to maybe read the newspaper. 30 minutes later, they will say hi. Now, you go to six. A six wants to be hugged. So the minute the four comes in, the six wants a kiss. And if a six realizes that fours just don't do this, they'll give you a kiss in 30 minutes,
yes.
then it's an understanding of this. Because I think that basically anyone can get on. If you're accepting your partner, because when you first meet them, you actually accept them for what they are, and then often there's an attempt to change them to suit your personality.
Now we're getting into that dirty word change, which seems to destroy just about every good relationship out there. For some reason or other, even though you're strongly attracted to somebody and you fall madly in love with them, at some point you decide, no, I really don't like the way they are. I've got to change them from top to bottom.
Which is why relationships fail.
Yes, exactly. And what you're saying is don't try to change them, but you can work with them. Once you understand their needs and their personality makeup, you can adjust your behavior in such a way that you can be more compatible. Basically, you're saying you can be compatible with anyone if you work hard enough at it.
You can. You see, what happens, with each number, there's a positive and there's a negative. And if you try to change them, you can bring out the negative energy rather than enhancing that to bring out the positive.
Because people resent anybody trying to change them.
Well, do you know, I honestly believe, if there's that vibe there, there's that electricity, you can get on well with anyone if you're prepared to accept them. And, you know, like we're talking about the five who would be talking all the time, the four could say, honey, you know, could you just give me 30 minutes and then we'll talk later? And so it's not saying, God, when I come in, you're always talking. And this is what people do. They get defensive and angry, which really, it's like standing on a flower. The love that's first there gets squashed.
Yes. And let's talk a little bit about women. I know that you say that women have a bad tendency to rush into relationships. Why is that?
Well, you know, I'd thought of writing a book called Desperate Women and Unavailable Men. Because basically, the man is the hunter. If you go back to the actual nature, the man is the hunter, and you know the woman is the prey. And I see so
right.
many women running after the man. They're so desperate, and the man's basic nature is to court. Possibly 97% of my readings are with desperate women, or when they get, you know, it's keeping me buoyant. when they get into a relationship, is this the one? And,
yes.
You know, within 4 weeks, why haven't got an engagement ring on? You have to allow a relationship to develop. It's almost as if there's this hurry, because I don't know, here there seem to be some quite nice men here in New Zealand. There are 5 women to 1 man, so I can see why the desperation is there.
Yes, here in the United States, we don't have as bad of a male-female ratio, but of course there are more single women in America than men. In fact, to be exact, there are 43 million single women in the United States, that is adult single women, and only 41 million single men in America. So there's a 2 million surplus single women in America.
That's interesting. Is that also because women live longer?
Yes, exactly. The average woman in the United States lives 5 years longer than the average man. So you would think that, especially women as they get older, they find that the odds get worse and worse for them because, after 35, which is the middle age group there where, you have 50% men, 50% women at age 35. And from that point on, the men start dropping off like flies. So by the time a woman reaches age 60 in the United States, for every single man age 60 in America, there are 3.5 single women age 60. So it gets tough for women as they get older. And I do see that desperation tends to come in as women get older and they see that the dating pool is not as large as they would like it to be.
But, it's not only that, because in California, a lot of the relationships are built on the physical.
Yes.
And as you're getting older, you're not as attractive. Whereas in New Zealand, it's totally different because the physical is not as people aren't so much interested in the physical, and so the relationships there, when they get in relationships, often are longer lasting. Because if you're looking for soulmates, you're not going to find this in a silicon boob job or whatever it is. It's
yes.
Who the person is, who they are inside, and I found that there's a lot of people who are looking for the blonde, tall, da-da-da-da-da, here.
Yes.
And so, I get women who come to me, and if they don't fit into that mold, then they become desperate because they think they're not desirable, which is
yes. Well, it's unfortunate, but that is the society we have in America. It is a very superficial society. People are very much into exterior beauty. This is where Hollywood is based, of course, in America. And you're saying New Zealand is a little bit different, that people are less superficial, they're more looking for the soulmate rather than the bedmate?
Yes. Basically because there's a lot of farmers there, so the Auckland's different, but with the farmers, it's a lady who could actually be quite plump and, who would fix his bacon and eggs and look after the children. So in a lot of ways, it's a different type of lifestyle. It's not... it's an easier lifestyle.
Now, you've been all over the world, Beryl, teaching people about numerology and counseling people, and you've talked a little bit about America and New Zealand. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of the other countries and how they differ in terms of male-female relationships and dating and so forth. For example, Australia, the cousin to New Zealand, what would you say about the Aussies in terms of dating?
The Australian man is basically quite, I'm generalizing here, not everyone, is basically
yes.
quite... course, and so it's a lot harder for Australian women over there than it is here. And I haven't spent a lot of time in Australia, but it's very similar to New Zealand, but the men are harder to get on with. But what I found very interesting was when I was in Africa, because basically there I saw the most compatible relationships ever. Now, you're going to laugh about this one, and that's because the man had 4 wives. And so, therefore, he didn't stray because he didn't have time to. So if he only had one, there would be 3 women going hungry.
Yes,
so
I see what you're saying.
The women all looked after the children, so one could go to the market while the other one looked after it. And that worked. I mean, I'm not suggesting that we do it here. But it was a situation where every child was loved by every adult and also chastised by every adult. So it was very compatible and, quite interesting living there. I didn't see women roaming the street looking for a man. They were all hooked up.
Interesting. So if you're looking for a husband, go to Africa, but be prepared to share.
Well, you'll get the housework shared as well, won't you? So, yes.
Well, right, of course. And getting back to Australia, and you were mentioning as well with New Zealand, you're saying the men are more difficult to get along with in those countries than they are here in America, for example?
Well, the basic Australia, this is not all over, because in Sydney it can be a little difficult, a little different. But basically, the Australian man is a drinker, and it's changing now. But when I was over there, if there was a party, most of the men would be in the garage, while all the women would be inside talking about babies.
I know when I was talking to single women in Australia, they were very negative about single men. And what the Australian women told me was, when you go out on a date with an Australian man, all he wants to do is go down to the pub.
You're right.
And he wants to, and all he wants to do in the pub is drink and fight.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of Irish descent that, you know, in Australia. But basically, it's drinking. You know, it would be hard to find an Australian man without a can in his hand.
Well, you know, I've been to Australia many times doing singles conventions, and I want to defend the Australian men, because I've met a lot of them, and just about every Australian man I've met has been a really decent guy, very friendly, certainly fun to be with. So I actually think very highly of Australian men, but I must say that some of the Australian women are somewhat negative towards Australian men, and they seem to think that American men are the best ones because supposedly they treat women as an equal. Would you say that's true?
I feel, when I've seen relationships here, yes, you know, when I've seen a good one, it's a really good one. You know, things are changing. They're changing in Australia. And of course, you know, you were saying you were talking to the Australian men. Well, you know, they're great with men. It's when it's with the women that you have the problems, the way they treat them. In New Zealand, it used to be very difficult. It was similar to Australia. But women are fighting now. They just won't tolerate what they did before.
Yes. And I believe you're originally from England, is that correct?
Yes, yes.
And tell us a little bit about the British men. How would they compare with Americans and Australians and New Zealanders?
Well, I left there in 75, but the reason I left there is because most of the men go to the pub in Yorkshire, where I was born. They're going to the pub. Friday night is men's night out. Women aren't allowed. And so basically, it's, you know, there's a pub on every corner. So
yes.
Most men go to the pub. Some men go to the pub every night of the lives. You know, if you don't like drinking, you're stuck.
Yes. Well, we're running out of time here, Beryl. I want to remind everybody that you do have a book, which certainly is available for them to read, called Find Your Heart Number. You also have your health and spiritual retreat in New Zealand, your 10 acres there. And information about everything you do is available on your website at BerylNozidar.com. I'd like to thank my guest, Beryl Nozidar. Single Living is a production of the Singles Podcasting Network in San Rafael, California. If you have any comments or suggestions about Single Living, feel free to email us at singleliving@singlespodcastingnetwork.com. Again, thank you, Beryl, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Until next time, this is your host, Rich Goss.